An LGBTQI plus poet and scholar looks to indigenous people in North America for broader gender definitions that can help modern society as the current culture struggles over accepting multiple identities. Coley Driscoll of Oregon State University is the featured speaker at ISU's 24th Annual Women and Gender Studies Symposium. Driscoll says the term two-spirited or two-spirit includes a lot of different gender identities and terms amid Native peoples in North America and how they functioned in those societies.
In a lot of our traditions, folks that we would now call LGBTQ+ were simply part of their communities and often had particular roles and responsibilities within their communities and traditions. So there wasn't the kind of homophobia and transphobia often that we see manifested now in dominant culture.
How did they fit within the culture, within the society? What role did they play that not only filled a social function, but also made them an included part of the culture?
I think the part of it that is important to remember is that when we're talking about indigenous nations in the U.S., we're talking about over 500 Native nations, right, with our own traditions.
Well, you're Cherokee, so let's go there.
Sure, and I'm a non-citizen Cherokee. I'm not enrolled. I think that's important to say. The record historically is a little vague, actually, for Cherokee folks. But what people have said is that we were present. We did have particular roles within community, and that, I guess, living outside of a gender binary simply wasn't the most important thing about someone's life. What was important was how they took care of each other and their families and communities. In other communities, there was a much more known, very specific role and responsibility for two-spirit folks.
Like what?
In some communities, for instance, two-spirit people were responsible for burials and handling objects associated with the dead and for births. In some traditions, for naming of children. Often people parented children who were orphaned. In some communities, people were mediators and counselors, healers, diplomats. Wiwa, who was a famous Zuni, was a diplomat from Zuni Nation to Washington, D.C. She was also a weaver. So it really depends on those very specific traditions. But there's often, we see historically and in the present for people who are continuing those traditions, a lot of different kinds of roles and responsibilities for people we call two-spirit now.
So with the naming and the diplomacy and the mediating and taking care of orphans, those are venerated positions. Those are necessary positions. Is that are those various roles falling to LGBTQI plus people part of a recognition of interdependency or part of some aspect of their gender identity that is extremely useful in those functions?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a complicated question. I think that part of what makes it complicated is that the way that we understand a gender in dominant U.S. Community and culture right now tends to imagine that there are two fixed genders, that you are assigned a gender at birth, and you're supposed to do certain things, you know. But that's a very culturally specific way of understanding gender anyway, right? So I think that it gets a little hazy, really, in some ways. But I do think that one of the reasons that traditionally a lot of indigenous people in North America have had specific space for people we'd now call two-spirit is that there was often an understanding that people who can move between different gendered spheres, I guess, were people that should be paid attention to because they had more than one perspective and that they were able to mediate different kinds of moments and places and spaces. And I think that you're right, that those those functions are actually really important in any community. And, you know, I had someone tell me that she felt that some of the things that were happening that were going really, really wrong in the world right now are because we are often excluded from taking up those roles and responsibilities that we would have had at one point.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker, speaking with Quoley Driscoll of Oregon State, a two-spirit poet and activist, and a women and gender studies speaker at Illinois State University. Are there useful examples of the way indigenous cultures in North America handled LGBTQ roles and responsibilities in the society that can be used in the present struggle for LGBTQ rights?
I think so. And actually, part of it is that I think this idea of roles and responsibilities is really important, because often when we're talking about a struggle for LGBTQ plus rights, or any kind of rights-based framework, we're thinking about the way that communities or laws or nations that already have power over the future of a group of people allows people to have certain rights or not. And I think what's useful about roles and responsibilities, which is a concept that you often hear in indigenous communities, is that that shifts the framework. You know, so John Trudell, who was an indigenous activist and poet, he talks in some of his work about we need to leave a rights-based framework and actually move into a responsibility-based framework and stop talking about rights so much and start talking about responsibilities. And what he means...
Okay, what is that? What is... Yeah.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So what he means is that the way that things have been structured and are, and the way that power ends up functioning right now makes us think that the state, the United States government, whatever government, actually has authority, or actually has power. He would say that they have authority, and that people need to remember that, like, change doesn't happen because of those laws or anything that any kind of power structure says. It happens because people understand that they're responsible to each other and they have work to do. If we take that or understand that in a lot of indigenous frameworks and say, well, what then are LGBTQ plus responsibilities? I think it changes the conversation for us within those movements to make really important changes that do have to happen on levels of policy and law. But I think that sometimes we think that, well, if this law is changed, we'll be okay, you know? But really what we see is that there needs to be a much larger shift of culture and community and other people's kind of sense of what their own roles and responsibilities are to LGBTQ people as well. And I think that, that's a framework that I think is really important from indigenous communities in North America.
There is, of course, cultural pushback against these ideas, and it can be from something as simple as a refusal to address or even consider usages of pronouns, or it can be actual violence. How do you see that space of conflict playing out over the next few years?
Well, I'm not sure how I see it playing out over the next few years, but I do think it's significant that violence against LGBTQ plus people has increased pretty dramatically over the last 2 years. And I think that we see a shifting rhetoric and backlash happening right now in the United States against LGBTQ plus folks. And one of the ways that's playing out is that the rates of violence against trans people, particularly trans women of color, and most particularly Black trans women, is higher than we even have documented. I do think that there's a backlash that's happening that isn't separate from other kinds of backlashes around issues of justice and civil rights for all kinds of different people. What I'm hoping over the next 2 years is that we continue as LGBTQ plus people and communities to take care of ourselves and each other and try to move forward in struggles for justice and social change. And I think that's happening. I think that for some people, they thought this struggle is over once there's marriage equality, if they were benefited from that in a particular way. And what we're seeing is that that's not actually – actually violence is increasing right now against LGBTQ plus people. And so I think that means we need to take some time and gather ourselves and our communities and the people we care about up and figure out, you know, some other kinds of work that needs to take place.
Why do you think the violence is increasing? Is it the now that there is some legal system movement, is it a refuge of the defeated that violence is happening, or is it something else operating?
I think what's operating is that there's been a very public hateful rhetoric towards LGBTQ plus people that really has material effects on people's lives. I think that when we see some of the rhetoric from the Trump administration against trans people serving in the military, for instance, what people think then is, well, trans people aren't fully human, right? And I will be transparent that I'm pretty much a pacifist and not really into the idea of the military anyway. And nevertheless, when the federal government is kind of doing a kind of arguing, at least, that there should be a purging of trans people from military service, it signals something to people, right? Or if there's this kind of panic around bathroom usage and that some of the bathroom bills that have happened in the last few years, it signals to people, this is a community that we can attack. This is a community that is okay to hate, you know. And I don't think it's only trans communities. I think a lot of communities are experiencing this. But I think it is, you know, whether or not that kind of language caused direct violence, I think it's violent on its own right. But there's certainly a strong correlation that I think we should pay attention to.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker speaking with Quolee Driscoll. As they approach the Women and Gender Studies speaking engagement at ISU, would you read a piece of your poetry for us?
I will. Loving Day. And the epigraph reads, "Everyone get out of Pulse and keep running." Facebook post from Pulse Orlando, June 12th, 2016. To staunch the bleeding, sharp and hidden as a man, write a poem with intent and precision. Try to imagine to turn dancing into bodies, bodies. Write guns into outlines while stories play dead in the walls. Barricade police tape at South Orange and West Esther. I wanted to write a poem, but stuffed a handkerchief into my name and the bullet hole in his back instead. I wanted to write a poem, but the letters huddle together for 3 hours in a bathroom stall and bleed out. I know the sharp pop, stop turning this poem in the dark right now, sparks from a barrel. Words creep to shell casings, clot my blood, steal onto our televisions, whisper across our screens. I hear wounded knee, Spanish names, mass shootings in U.S. history, indigenous and black. And how much can our hearts carry? I'm tired of writing poems to our dead, but cannot withstand their tugs on my skirt, hungry little lullabies. Paper doesn't want held. But I need our dead. I need our living. I need someone to carry them.
Thank you. Your speech at ISU is about performing revolution. How does that poem fit into that mode?
I think to me, when I talk about revolution, is I'm talking about a radical transformation and understanding of the world that we're in and imagining other possibilities. And for me, poetry is a way to do that. Even though this poem is about particular act of violence, I think that even being able to tell those stories is a way of maybe bringing about particular kinds of revolution. Because I think as LGBTQ folks, as people of color, as indigenous people, our stories often get erased or silenced or ignored. And so for me, part of that work of social transformation feels important for me then to write and read a poem that is about a moment like the Pulse shootings.
Coralie Driscoll, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coralie Driscoll is the featured speaker of the 24th Annual Women's and Gender Studies Symposium at the Prairie Room of the Bone Student Center at ISU. They are a co-founder of the Indigenous People's Interest Group for the National Women's Studies Association. Driscoll's been honored several times for their nonfiction and trans and gender variant literature.